You are listening to the Joshua Segafis Podcast.
Welcome back to the Joshua Segafis Podcast, the only podcast that teaches you how to be truly alpha. If you're ready to level up to succeed at dating, relationships, business, fitness, and everything else that matters, then stick around. This is exactly where you want to be.
This episode is brought to you by my flagship dating course, Dating in the Wild, The Adult Man Method. Are you sick and tired of a lackluster dating life? Gentlemen, if you know anything about my personal story, you know that I used to suck at dating. I could barely get a text back from a woman, much less a date. I was lonely, depressed, anxious, and felt like my dating life was truly a hopeless endeavor. But I didn't give up, and eventually it all changed. I got to work and figured out how to transform myself from being a total dating zero to an absolute dating hero and succeeded in creating the dating life of my dreams. And in this dating course, you can learn the exact skills, strategies, techniques, and thought processes that I learned over 2.5 years of studying, trial, error, blood, sweat, tears, testing, and lots of hard work. The secret is to learn what women evolved to look for in a mate, and then to develop yourself into the truly masculine, attractive, high-value man who taps directly into the instincts that guide the ever-mysterious female mate selection process. Not only will this course teach you how to transform your dating life, it'll also empower you to become a better, more successful man in the process. So click on the link in the description, grab the course, and get ready to change your dating life forever. Tracy, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is, and I hope I pronounced this right, Tracy Pinnock. Is that correct?
Yeah. Awesome. Pinnock or Pinnock.
I usually Pinnock. Okay. I'm so used to calling you just Tracy. Ladies and gentlemen, Tracy and I go way back. We've talked at great length about relationships, breakups, and, you know, just everything in and around that zone. Tracy especially is an expert when it comes to breakups, and I'm going to let her just introduce herself and give you guys a little brief introduction before we launch into this topic.
All right. So yes, I'm Tracy Pinnock. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist and also a relationship coach. I, in my practice, in my therapy practice, tend to work with women around difficult life transitions, such as breakups or grief and loss. And I also work with couples on various couples issues.
Awesome. Awesome. So I don't want to delay too much. I want to get right into this. This is a really important topic, how to get over a painful breakup. In my life, I've gone through several painful breakups. This has been something that in part is what drove me to even start talking about relationships, dating, and masculine and feminine dynamics within relationships. And it's very fascinating to me. I often say that the quality of our relationships determines to a great extent the quality of our life. And, you know, breakups, they're a real serious thing. Some people have a really hard time getting over them. And some people, it actually changes their whole life trajectory, sometimes for the better, hopefully for the better, sometimes for the worse. And hopefully that's what maybe we can help to prevent by going over some of this stuff. And so ladies and gentlemen, once again, Tracy, like, this is really her wheelhouse. She is an expert at this stuff. And we've talked a lot about this. So Tracy, what I would love to do to provide value to the listeners is just go right into this. And I want to just hear you talk just from beginning to end about this issue of how to get over a painful breakup. We may break it down a little bit. I may ask you some questions, but I really just kind of want to hear you, just like you would talk to somebody across the table you're giving advice to if they're dealing with this. And I'm just going to turn it over to you.
All right. Well, thank you. Yes, absolutely. If you have any questions along the way, feel free to ask. But I do think you made a very good point, which is that relationships and therefore breakups can really change the trajectory of people's lives. And I think that realization from a personal experience is what really led me on this path to really helping people through breakups, because they are the type of loss that is very common, because most people have multiple breakups in a lifetime, right? But can be so impactful in how we go on to function. And I think that from that perspective, breakups don't necessarily get enough, there's not necessarily enough support around them when they are significant breakups. And to be clear, you can have breakups that aren't particularly impactful to you. Maybe it was disappointing, but the relationship was maybe not that significant in your life or something like that. So if that's something that you kind of easily move past, then great. The work I do is when you're really struggling with the process of the breakup for whatever reason. It could have been the length of the relationship. It could have been the obligations or commitments that were involved, just anything, whatever the reasons, when you're, you know, you realize you're struggling with it. Because of the realization that breakups can really impact your life, I, you know, really felt that it was important to help people hone in on that actual process. One of the first things to recognize about a breakup is that it is a loss. And what I mean by this is when we hear the terms grief and loss, we tend to automatically associate that with death. And the reality is that any significant loss causes grief. It could be loss of a job, of a home, of a relationship, or physically of a person through death. So as soon as we understand that a breakup is a loss, then we are able to give it the space and support that it needs, just as we would for someone who's grieving the death of someone. And that means then, you know, when you think about, well, what do we tend to think people need when they are grieving, you know, the loss of someone who's passed away, like, you know, community, social support, someone to sit there and listen, maybe even different rituals like a funeral or memorial or things like that, that people hold. Sometimes we give people space, but there are all these things that we kind of lean into when someone is grieving a death. And the same sort of idea applies to a breakup or any significant loss that a person has. So as soon as we have that realization for ourselves, when it comes to helping ourselves move past a painful breakup, as soon as we can give ourselves that, we can show ourselves more grace when we understand, okay, I'm dealing with a big loss. All right. That means it's okay for me to not feel great and look great for every second and to, like, you know, just be like, this really hurts. This is really hard. So I break the breakup recovery process into three phases, which I call the survival phase, the maintenance phase, and the thriving phase. And in that first phase, the survival phase, this is where you're really, really honoring your feelings and your experiences and the past. This is where you are letting yourself feel it. You know, I am sad. I am angry. One of the key tasks that I encourage people to do during the survival phase, which is, you know, sometime soon after the breakup, it could be weeks, it could be months, but it's the initial phase that you're going through. I encourage people to do what I like to call like the emotional identification exercise, where you sit quietly, privately, and you really ask yourself, what am I feeling around this experience? Because the truth is, you're feeling multiple emotions. The obvious ones tend to be sadness or anger, but there's likely confusion. There may be shame. There may be embarrassment, guilt. There can be all sorts of things. And you really want to be able to honor the fact that you're experiencing these things. And so I suggest like writing it down, like here are the emotions, sadness, anger, you know, confusion. And then you want to write next to each of those emotions why you're feeling that emotion. Sadness because I miss the person or the idea of what we would have been. Anger because, you know, they betrayed me. And confusion because I don't understand, like whatever the reasons. And this is just, this gives some objectivity to your emotions and helps you to really be able to say, okay, this is what I'm experiencing. Because I think part of what's hard about grief or any breakup is that there are so many emotions that we can kind of be confused at the different things we're feeling, because we can ride that roller coaster from sadness and really missing them, and then anger and just like wishing they would like disappear off the face of the earth, any of that sort of stuff. And I think that can be very confusing for us. And then also, like, you know, again, missing them and wanting those things back. So like having maybe even a sense of looking at the good times. So it can create a lot of ambivalence for us. So by us writing these things down, I think it goes a long way to give a little objectivity. And then you can also target, okay, if I've acknowledged that I'm angry, what are things that I tend to do or can do to soothe myself through anger, to soothe myself through sadness? Because what you're really getting at is acknowledging that you're human and you have emotions. Those aren't going to stop. So good luck trying to stop those. But instead, you want to be able to manage those emotions in a way that is productive and healthy to your life and doesn't just send you completely off course.
Yeah, I think that people want, and I can relate to this, they want to stop feeling the bad emotions, right? It's like the first thing is like, I want relief or whatever. And it's like, well, yeah, fair enough. However, like you're, and I can relate to what you're saying, because there's a place for needing to address those emotions, kind of, right? And this is helpful, I think. And so, yeah. No, anyway, I think that people want to rush through them. And what would you say to someone who's just like, I just want to feel better? Like, you know, why do I have to do all this stuff? Yeah. Why is this important?
The answer is you're exactly right. I say to people, you can't rush the healing. You can't. Mm-hmm. You want to? Yep, we all do. Nobody wants to feel crappy any longer than they have to. So we have a sense of like, I just want the pain to go away. And my answer to that is you must do the work. Everything that I just described is part of the work of moving through it. You are not going to wake up the next day if it was a significant relationship to you, if it was a significant loss. You're not going to wake up the next day and feel completely better about everything. And that even applies to situations where the relationship ending might have actually been a relief in a lot of ways for you, because there's not a bunch of arguing, or you had reasons why you know you needed to let it go. Or even if they let it go, you acknowledge there were reasons why it needed to go. So there can definitely even be a sense of relief upon a breakup, but still with that can come so much sadness and anger and confusion, because you went into the relationship thinking and hoping that it would last, right? And you had ideas about the future. So I say that to say, so then when we're feeling any sort of uncomfortable feeling, sadness, again, anger, confusion, we want that to stop, because who likes feeling that way? I want to be, you know, I want to feel happiness and joy and peace and all of that. And the way you get there is by letting yourself initially feel what you're going through and not doing the stuffing. And I want to be clear, there are different things that you need throughout your grief process, which I guess brings me to explaining that grief is a process. It is something that plays out over time, as opposed to like an event where it's a turnaround, right? So again, even when somebody passes away, your experience around dealing with that death goes through phases over time, right? So I say this to say that you cannot rush this process. And what we might do is we may initially stuff down or ignore our feelings or tell ourselves we're not feeling it. And that can serve an initial purpose to get us through the initial aspects of things we need to do. For example, maybe you were living with someone or you had all sorts of things intertwined and you need to like find a new place to live. Maybe your children are being enrolled into new schools or any of this stuff. Those are logistical things that you need to get done. And so you might, you don't want to necessarily be in a place of emotional overwhelm when you need to handle those things. So there can be a purpose to like, okay, all right, I just need to get these things done and then I'll tend to my feelings. But the key is you still must tend to those feelings. Like you have to lean into that, which brings me into the next phase that I call the maintenance phase, where the idea in the maintenance phase, that's where I say you're establishing a new normal for your life. So let's say you did, you know, move out, you moved into a new place and you have new, things in your life. Maybe again, your kids are going to a new school. There's maybe a new arrangement in the parenting arrangement. If you have children, it could be anything. This is where you are settling into what your life is like without being in that relationship. So this is also where you have more time and space to learn from the past. In the survival phase, you're just acknowledging, this is how I feel. You know, I want to honor my experiences and my feelings. In the maintenance phase, you're like, okay, this is what I went through. This is what I felt. What can I take from that? What are things from the past that I was happy with and I want to continue to bring that into my future? What are things that I want to change? In this regard, this is in regards to the relationship itself, but also life circumstances that you want for yourself. So your finances, your career, your health, any of those things. What do I want to do differently? And what do I want to stay the same? So this phase, the maintenance phase, is where you're really getting a sense of those things. And you're getting the things in place in your life that you need in order to thrive. So again, did you need to change jobs? If you knew, you know, and eventually you're going to want to date again. And, you know, if you have intentions of having a romantic partnership in your life. So you're looking at, what are the things that are going to help me to be able to date? And ideally date better this next time around. So all of those sort of, so this can be logistics of like childcare. This can be things that you, I'm a big fan of like outsourcing things that you can. So like, is it like getting your groceries delivered because it gives you more time to do this? Like all of these sort of things are, you're really gathering those during the maintenance phase.
Okay. So, what do you say to people who ask like, well, okay, should I jump right back into dating, you know, to get over, like, you know, what do they call it? The rebound, right? Right. There's this saying, and I've talked about this sometimes. It's like, the best way to get over someone's to get under or on top of someone else. And it's like, yeah. Okay, now when someone says this, what's your response to that? How do you feel about this?
So generally my response is balance, which is really my response to everything in life. And what I mean by this is dating, I think, is absolutely a pivotal part of recovering from a breakup. The question is when to date and like when to start that. And part of the answer to this is, sorry to disappoint people, I do not have an exact time frame. I'm not going to be able to say 3 weeks after, 6 months after. It is such a subjective assessment. And literally, I'm recording this video for my YouTube channel and it'll come out in a few weeks, but it's literally about how do I know when I'm ready to date again? And the short answer is it's an assessment you have to do for yourself that involves things like think about it as, when I am dating other people, I want to be in a place where I am not sabotaging my own efforts in the dating process. So what do I mean by that? Examples might be if like you are in a very emotional space around your breakup or your ex, and the mention of their name or someone asking you, so what happened, like sends you into emotional spirals, whether it's crying or angry rants or things like that, right? Not the time for you to go out.
Even on the inside, like even if it's hidden, but it's on the inside.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think let's say like you're actually on a date with somebody, right? This is somebody who doesn't know you, like first impressions, all of that. There is something to be said that you being able to manage that outwardly and not present that to someone, that's very helpful. Mm-hmm. I do think that though, if it still sends you on like that emotional spiral inside, it's not so much a concern about your ability to like go on dates with people and present yourself well, but what that then leads into is like one of my second points of like, even if you're past the point of being outwardly emotional about your ex, the question now becomes, do I have baggage that I'm carrying into any future situation that may have me interact with other people in an unhealthy way that negatively impacts any future relationship? So for example, even if I'm not outwardly showing all this emotion, but I know I'm still really bent out of shape about whatever happened with my ex, and maybe it's caused me to be like extremely, mistrusting of people or something like that. And I don't give people the benefit of the doubt. I need to think like, could I bring that into something else? So to answer your question, even if you're outwardly presenting yourself well, but inwardly you're holding on to these sort of things, then yeah, that's stuff that you're also still wanting to work through for the sake of, if things start to get more serious with someone, you do not want to sabotage that situation.
Yeah. You don't want to project your stuff onto them, kind of basically. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. No, that's awesome.
So yeah, in the maintenance phase, you're kind of getting things in order and getting to more of a new normal. The thriving phase is what I like to call the phase of hope. So this is where you're really looking out to the future of your life. And you start with dreaming, like, what do I want things to look like for myself? Again, financially, career-wise, do I want kids? Do I want more kids? Romantically, where do I want to live? Any of the life things. And you're starting out with these ideas and then you're really honing in on them and making them goals. So like, what do I want to accomplish when, and what is my plan for making that happen? And how do I start stepping into that plan bit by bit? One exercise that I like to do is what I call the goals timeline. So it's very straightforward. You're literally making like a 3 or 5 year timeline for your life and the significant goals that you want to achieve, the significant purchases that you want to make, you know, house, new car, income property, whatever it might be. Did you want to start a business? Do you want to have kids or more kids? Like, and you're mapping this out on what would be your ideal timeline for those things happening, because you can then work backwards and fill in mini goals for each of the major goals to say, okay, this is the step that I'm going to take to start this. This is the step. And then you can literally start breaking it down. Like, from where I stand presently, what are the things I need to be doing to get to this goal in 3 years and this goal in 5 years? So this is the thriving phase is where you're really like looking at like, oh, this is what I want. And then romantically, one of the things I have people do is what I call the ideal partner list. And it's not really a new concept. It's really ultimately you making this list of all of the ideal traits and qualities that you would have in a partner. Mm-hmm. I like to use the prompt, imagine you had a magic wand, you could wave that wand and the ideal person for you appeared. What would be this person's physical traits, their characteristics, their life circumstances? Make this list as long as you possibly can. Don't ignore the basic things like kindness and respect, which people just kind of assume and take for granted. But if you're in a relationship where you realize kindness and respect weren't there, you realize how significant those things are. You write those on the list. And then I tend to walk people through a process of assessing that list and like how it stands up to or what they're, it helps them be aware of what they're looking for in a partner. So when they are meeting people, they're better able to channel their energy in the right directions. Meaning you meet someone and they're really not checking off things on this list. So maybe they're going to be more of a friend or someone who you don't deal with at all versus someone who you choose to have romantic interest in or pursue a romantic relationship with.
Okay. Got you. Do you find that, okay, one thing that I feel like is pretty common when you're talking about setting goals, like you mentioned, of 3 to 5 year goals, sometimes people think, well, why do I really need to do that? Like, can't dating just be like, oh yeah, just, you just meet someone and it's, you know, this and that. And now obviously those who listen to my podcast know that I'm all about living intentionally, creating your own destiny. However, there are a lot of people who think, oh, dating should be organic. If I try to set these goals, isn't that going to force it? What do you say to that kind of like idea?
Yeah. I mean, the organic part of dating should be the, you meet someone, do you have good chemistry? Like, is there real attraction, not just physically, but intellectually, all of those things. Like, okay, do we vibe? You can't negotiate attraction, as I've seen like somewhere before. And I said, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But like, what we need to remember is that a relationship is not just someone who you're sitting there hugging and kissing. Like if we're talking that you're looking for a committed, like long-term lifetime relationship, then this is someone who you are literally building a life with. So there are very practical aspects that impact the wellness and the health of the relationship. So I would say love alone is not enough. Love is a very important foundational aspect of a healthy relationship, but just loving someone does not a happy relationship make. You can love someone all day and they can, you know, you can not be surviving because, you know, financially they're not able to like, you know, contribute, or the house is, whatever your things are that are important to you. Maybe they're not showing up as a parent in the way you need, or maybe they're just completely disrespectful to you or things like that, right? You can love them all day and still be absolutely miserable and have a life that isn't very happy because there are very practical aspects that are not in place. So to this idea of, oh, it should be organic. Yeah. On that part of like our chemistry, all of that, but you do need to know what is important to you as a person so that when you're looking to bring someone else into your world and to enter someone else's world, that you are making sure that you're two people who are going to be able to thrive together. So it's not all fully organic. I mean, it can be, but this is exactly how people, I like to say, like fall into relationships that they come to realize too late are not ideal for them.
Yeah. After they've already built up an attachment, which makes it very messy, right? It makes it very messy. What do you say to people who, and I feel like this is very strongly associated with breakups, is this like guilt, concept of guilt. And then another one is kind of like, you said it earlier, kind of like shame or embarrassment. And I think it depends on which side of it you land on. Like if you end it, you might be, in my experience anyway, you might be more tempted to feel guilty, like, oh, I hurt that person or whatever. But if it gets ended with you, then it's very obviously kind of embarrassing, that kind of thing, right? So how would you guide people in dealing like with these kinds of specific, particularly I would say troublesome emotions?
Yeah. So ultimately, and I think this is one of those things where it's like, it's hard to hear in the moment when you're in the beginning phases of the breakup and very emotional about it. It's hard to hear the fact that like, ultimately what it comes down to is being able to acknowledge the benefits. So I kind of say, be grateful for the things that didn't work out, like being able to acknowledge the benefits of that thing, the person ending it with you or you choosing to end it with them, because clearly there were things that were not in the right place. And so for instance, dealing with, you know, shame or embarrassment from somebody breaking up with you, that's a human emotion. Emotions are not to be judged. Actions are. So what we do with our emotions, we can judge. I can be angry and I can like punch somebody in the face, or I can be angry and I can like go cool off sort of thing. The anger is not the issue, is what I do with it, right? So I say this to say, you're going to feel what you're going to feel. So if there is some shame and embarrassment, it's there. But what do I do with that? And how do I conceptualize that to help myself through it? And it's this idea of like, do you want somebody to be with you who doesn't really want to be with you? And this brings up this concept of like wanting it versus needing someone. This idea of like, ideally, don't you want someone to be with you who wants to be with you rather than someone who needs to be with you for any of the reasons? Oh, we have kids together and I need you to help parent them, or money, or whatever, status, anything. Or image, exactly that. A lot of times people want to keep up an image of this intact relationship or things like that. And so there can be a lot of shame and embarrassment for that reason. But ultimately, and this goes to the guilt thing too. So you break up with somebody because you realize things were not okay for you. You're not fulfilled, whatever it is. It does no one any good to continue to exist in a relationship in which the other person doesn't want to be with you, or you don't want to be with that other person, because this is exactly how unhealthy and unhappy relationships evolve. Then there becomes bitterness and resentment. And then it's showing itself in various aspects of the relationship. And then everyone is miserable, that, or at least one person is. Maybe someone's there kind of faking it because they don't want to hurt the other person. Again, they might feel guilt, but you're going to be unhappy and miserable. That's going to impact how you interact with your partner. And again, if you bring kids into the mix, how you parent your kids, what they see. So then we start getting down to a quality of life issue, because then how content and at peace are any of us in this family unit? How content or at peace are we when one or both partners are not ultimately happy?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And in that, when you say quality of life issue, it's also true that we have a great deal of power over our quality of life. And you said it exactly, gratitude, deploying gratitude, which is, a lot of people are like, oh, that's lame. Like, you shouldn't, it's almost like, it almost gets into territory of like, telling someone who's sad to feel gratitude is almost like victim blaming, that kind of, like, in that, like, it kind of goes down that rabbit hole, but it's not to that extreme level. It's just, it literally is a useful tool. Like, gratitude is a super useful tool. Steve Harvey talks about often how he has a whole gratitude list that he reads every morning, and it's got like 75 things on it that he's like grateful for. And he was like, usually I don't even get past 12 or 13 and it's made my day so good. And that is true. It's like, and I've experienced that too. It's so powerful, but I think people underestimate how, when we intentionally deploy gratitude, we can really increase our own quality of life. It's like, just if I'm having a bad day, all I have to think about is, I'm so glad my kids are healthy. And that is such a massive thing. It's like, whew, you know, maybe my relationship is a mess, but at least my kids are healthy. Like, wow, what a much bigger nightmare that would be if they weren't healthy, right? So yeah, no, excellent point. Excellent.
So yeah, absolutely. I'm a firm believer in gratitude and like the way to, and I want to be clear to your point. So this is why I say it's hard to hear in the moment when you're actively sad in that moment, right? It's not to say, oh, you know, pep up, you know, smile. No, be sad. Like, have that, again, back to the survival phase, have that experience. And then as you're on the part of coming to the other side of it is also being able to say, so I like to call it, it's both and that's what most of life is. What I mean is, I am sad and grateful that I am alive to even feel sad. Or I am sad and grateful that, so I'm sad that this person left or ended it, and grateful that I'm not still in a relationship where somebody on the other side didn't want to be here. Yeah. We have to sometimes reach for the smallest positive thing to get ourselves up that ladder, up that.
Yeah. Hill. Especially in the beginning. Yeah. And another thing, and for the listeners, I talk about the alpha mentality all the time, talk about stoicism, but the thing is that a lot of people, especially with the alpha mentality and that verbiage, a lot of people think, oh yeah, you should be a tough man or tough woman, have no emotions, just be stoic. It's like, no, that's not the truth. And you said it exactly. We can't control our emotions. This is a program, an ancient program within us that gives us information about our environment and our surroundings. And it's very useful. It's just that it's important for us to remember. And like you said, stoicism actually isn't about not having emotions. It's about just choosing intentionally what you're going to do about them, right? And that makes all the difference. So having emotions doesn't make you weak, and it doesn't make you a bad person. Even if you feel crazy emotions, it doesn't make you a bad person. It's all about, you know, hopefully you choose to do things that will make your life better and that will help to carry you in a better direction, right?
Yes. Emotions make you human. So as I say to people, the good news is you're human. The bad news is you're human. That's what emotions make you. But to your point, we have choice of what we do with those emotions.
100%. Okay. So the three phases, one more time, they were what were they again?
Survival phase, maintenance phase, and thriving phase.
Okay. Thriving phase. I've heard this statistic it's not really a statistic. It's more like a saying. I've heard this thrown around. They say it takes you about half the time, like the length of the relationship, to get over the relationship. So if it was a 2-year relationship, you can expect for it to take a year before you actually get over it. Do you find any truth to this? Like, this is obviously an arbitrary kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. It's interesting. And so I don't track it. I've never like really tracked it. Like when I'm like even talking to people, like, oh, how long was the relationship? That sort of thing. I'm oftentimes looking at how long ago did the relationship end? Mm-hmm. And ultimately how intertwined were your lives? Because think about it, there can be people who were in a 3-year relationship versus people who were in a 1-year relationship, and the speed of that 1-year relationship ramped up where they're like super like joined in a lot of ways, where the 3-year relationship, maybe they're a little less joined, you know, everyone's life circumstances are different. Yeah. Because what it really comes down to is like the date, like the impact on your life on the day-to-day basis. You know, again, was I living with this person, had joint this, that, and the third, like how much were our lives intertwined? So were our families really close? Like any of the things, mm-hmm. because with a breakup, you're like starting to unravel yourself out of a lot of that. So a lot of it to me has to do with, so obviously the length of the time of the relationship is a general indicator of how entwined people may likely be. But it's more about the impact that it's like had on your life in terms of, you know, if you really relied or depended on your partner in various ways, that's going to be a harder blow in a breakup than where someone who's more independent of their partner. So I don't really pay attention. I haven't tracked like, oh, is it taking someone who's been in a 2-year relationship a year to get over it? But this does bring up this concept of healing and being healed. And this also comes up in the idea of dating again. Like I need to be healed before I date again. And healing, just like grief, is also a process. Like, spoiler alert, a lot of things that humans have to go through are processes and not these one-time events. So I say that to say that your healing is going to happen over time and probably in various ways throughout your entire lifetime. So back to kind of what I was saying about the date, when are you ready to date? It's not necessarily looking for this finite time of like, I'm healed now, so now I'm ready. Mm-hmm. It's about how is my behavior, how is my thinking impacting the way I relate to myself and other people? Because I can both acknowledge that I'm sad about a previous relationship or even miss certain aspects about a previous relationship and still date someone and build a relationship with them if the ways in which I'm relating to them and dealing with those feelings is not negatively impactful to the relationship, if that makes any sense. It doesn't mean that you like forget about your past or that you don't have any loving feelings towards people of the past or any of that stuff. And I think that can be dangerous for us, because if we do think in that very dichotomous black and white way, it can get us into a lot of trouble. And so it's more about being able to integrate the various experiences of a person's life.
Yeah. It's really interesting how, like, as you get into this business of how humans work, like how our brains and emotions work, it gives us a lot of good information, but it's so easy to go through life and not to really think about these things. And that was me when I was younger. And I first started getting interested. I don't know if you have ever read Ken Kies Jr. He was the guy, he wrote the Handbook to Higher Consciousness, and a friend recommended, and I read this stuff when I was in my 20s, but I remember thinking, this is so crazy. Like, this guy's talking about how you can understand yourself and have like better emotions, and, you know, you can, well, not better emotions, but you can have better experiences with your emotions, and, you know, you can have this kind of rational thought process and yada, yada, yada. And this is like began this journey for me of, and I think that this is what's fascinating to me, in fact, about relationships, is this journey of like trying to understand how the human machine works. And that if we can understand how it works, we can have a better experience, obviously, because it's like getting in a car and trying to take a trip and you don't know how to operate it. That's kind of a stressful trip, right? But like, we have to have a better experience in this vessel if we know how to operate. Now, that leads me to another question. And so let's just say somebody is kind of in the thick of it in a breakup, and they're just like, you know what? I'm freaking out. I'm very upset right now. I literally don't even know what to do. Like, maybe it's very new, quick, immediate, like, and this may sound weird, but like emergency steps they should take in the short term.
Yeah. So yeah, if I'm going to give it to you, the quick and dirty version, it's, remove contact from the ex outside of, obviously, if you have to co-parent, but then it's still strictly business. You're only communicating about, okay, we're dropping kids off here, picking them up here, done, done. So stop following them on social media. If you need to block, all of that stuff, boom, cut off contact as much as possible. Two, give yourself time and space to feel your feelings. Like if you need to cry, cry, if you need to scream, scream. Three, I can't stress enough the aspect of community, some sort of social connection with another human being. Maybe it's a good friend, maybe it's a parent, maybe it's a therapist, finding some, maybe it's some online group. Try to, ideally, you know, you have these wonderfully supportive people in your life who you can talk to. Everyone doesn't have that. So start with what you can. And so a lot of times that's what leads people to therapy, because they feel like that's their first point of like any sort of social sharing. But that's also very important. We heal within community. And so, yeah, cut off contact, actually give yourself time and space to feel your feelings, social communication and support, and then distraction. So like, meaning like, distraction in terms of like life things you need to do. So if you have a job, you need to show up to work. All right, let me do what I need to do to at least show up to work. I may not show up chipper and happy, but I'm there. Or I need to clean my house. Let me clean my house. Or so continuing to do the logistics of your life that help your life function so that when you are emotionally on the other end of this, all the pieces of your life haven't also like fallen by the wayside sort of thing. And I want to acknowledge that some people may really struggle with those aspects if they really go into like a deep depression on this. So this is why I can't stress enough the professional help side. If you find yourself in that sort of situation where you're like, I don't even have motivation to like go take a shower, like that sort of stuff, because then what we're leading into there is like situational depression. And so you might need professional help to do that as well. But generally speaking, cutting off contact, literally feel your emotions, get some social support, and do the basic things that keep your life functioning. Those are the boom, boom, boom.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. No, that's really good. When you talk about like ceasing contact with the ex, blocking the, you know, the ex in the short term, right? This is like in the short term. It's like, I think a lot of people find that so challenging because they're still holding on to it, right? They don't want to let, even though it's over, they don't want to let go. And I attribute it to our attachment. You know, it's hard to let go of those things. What do you say to those people? Like, if they're like, do I really have to? What if it could work out still? You know?
Right. Yeah. I'm saying that, no, you don't really have to. And yep, it could still, by if, and I don't know if you're saying if it could still work out, like I can still heal without doing that. Is that what you're kind of?
No, I mean, I think some people think, I wish we could get back together.
We'll get back together. Oh.
Yeah. That's what I know. My thought process on that is if it ended, there was a reason why it ended. If it wasn't going to end, it wouldn't have gotten to that point of discussion. And also, never let someone tell you they don't want you twice. You know, you hold your head high and walk away from it and find a new path to walk. However, there are a lot of people who have a lot of trouble with that. You know, they're like, you know, there's a part of me that wishes we could reconcile. Yeah. So what do you say?
Okay. So a couple of things. I like what you say about like, yeah, never let a person tell you twice that like, yeah, they don't want you. But, and to your point, there's a reason why I end it. So my whole go-to thing. So yeah, I just made a video about this. Like, do I try again with my ex? Right. The reasons why the relationship ended, if those things have not changed, then let go of the idea of going back. What would be the point to go back to the same circumstances that you left that ended it in the first place? Number one. Number two, this idea of like, well, maybe it will work out. Maybe we will get back together. Yeah, people get back together all the time and some go on to live happily ever after. So I'm not arguing that point, but there are reasons why that happens. And so what I'm saying is blocking someone on social media or like not communicating with them is not going to be the reason you don't get back together with someone who you're meant to get back together with. If that's your perspective of like, but we could still, you can still let go on social media. Like what I'm saying is I know we live in a time now where it feels so pivotal to life, but like, believe it or not, like relationships aren't and shouldn't be like made or broken through like social media. So
yeah.
The truth of the matter is you don't have to do any of this, but if we're talking about you wanting to like get through and move through, you know, as fast as possible, or really as uncomplicated as possible to not complicate your grief process, because complicated grief is a thing. then you are wanting to do the things that reduce the likelihood of that happening. And one of them is being bombarded with images of your ex's life on social media.
Like, temptation to like sink a bunch of time into just checking their page constantly like that. You could waste hours and hours that you could be spending. Honestly, even watching TV would be better because it's distracting.
Yeah. Like at least it's not creating this emotional like pain for you. So that's like, if you're asking quick and dirty, and that's why I say quick and dirty, because that's one that people have a hard time with.
I'm
like,
And
I remember an experience with an ex where they blocked me. And of course I was initially like, oh my gosh. It is the best thing they ever, ever, ever did for me. The best thing they could have done was they blocked me, because over time, then I was like, oh, I'm not being emotionally tortured. Like when I go onto my social media feed, this is great.
And you didn't, and sometimes those situations are different too, because you don't then have to make the choice. They like make it for you. And that can be like, we can never expect that, but I've had that in my past too happen where, you know, an ex just like really cut off contact. And then later on, I was grateful because it was like, you know, that made it easier to move on. And I didn't just keep, you know, hanging around. Whereas it can be easy to get into limbo, like a weird limbo, if you don't cut contact. Yeah, I completely agree. That's excellent. Okay, so I want to talk just a little bit about your work in, like, now you have a YouTube channel, and for everyone who's listening, we're gonna put Tracy's links down below so you can check out her channel, check out her stuff, because it's awesome. But I want to just talk a little bit about this business of like, as you create content in this space, as you help people in the space, right now in our culture, what do you see as being like the big issue, like that you see that more people are dealing with and having a hard time with? This seems to be a common theme, if any, in this space, in this like breakup and recovery kind of thing.
Definitely, I think just very human things that we kind of mentioned, like, I want to get past the pain fast. How do I do that? Like, I would say if that was like one of the top questions that people come to, is like, how do I make it stop? And I'm like, it's work. Because again, if you had a relationship that was, whether regardless of how long it was, but it was important to you, and it was there, like, to think that you're suddenly turning that around on the flip side when you lose that thing is not realistic. So I think there is like, yes, this desire for things to end, to get fill the release quickly, and therefore not really accept that there's work to be done, such as, you know, yeah, stop following your ex on social media. It's hard, but that's one of the things you have to do, or that you should do to help. And then I think going, if you take that then into like the natural extension of a breakup, which is to eventually date again, then we're bringing in things around people struggling. Like, I'll hear a lot of people say they don't want to repeat what they did before. So a fear of making the same mistakes or getting with the same type of person. And that's the part where I say, no, this is about empowering yourself and realizing that you have more power in the situation than you think. Yes, you can absolutely not control another person's behavior. No, but you can control your behavior and your responses to someone's behavior. And you can control what you initially put out there to people and what you choose to tolerate and not tolerate. So you want someone else to treat you in ways that you like and for it to all work out. Of course, everyone does. But then also, if someone doesn't treat you in a way that they should treat you, you have a choice. You have power. You can decide, I'm not going to tolerate that. And a lot of times people do not hone that power and take that power because they want to like the person, and they want the person to like them, and they want to be with them. They made up in their mind what it's supposed to be like. So they will tolerate all sorts of bullshit, and they will just like stick with it and then be miserable and then say things like, oh, but I love them and I can't. Yes, you can, actually. And that part is hard. But you know what's also hard? Existing in a shit relationship. Like, I don't, like, which hard do you want?
Oh yeah. 100%. Yeah, that absolutely. And not just to mention Steve Harvey again, I've been listening to a lot of Steve Harvey lately, so this is why this comes up, but like, you know, he says, you know, it's hard to try to achieve success for yourself. Right. But it's also hard to live an unsuccessful life. So it's like, well, pick your hard. You could spend 3-4 years building a life you like, and then it'll be a lot less hard, or you can just go ahead and keep living the hard that is an unsuccessful life that you don't like, and that's just going to be hard. So it's like another, and that leads to something I was just thinking about the other day, is in this life, right? We do have a lot of power to we do have a lot of power to create the life we want for ourselves, but a lot of people have this illusion that if we stay in the comfort zone, we will be safe. But it's like, no, that's not true. That's not actually safety. That's just, you're just there and you're not going anywhere. And it's like the outside of that does feel dangerous, but once you get out and you face those fears, and that's really what adventure, like, and I talk about adventure a lot. Adventure is always characterized by a little bit of danger you have to overcome, right? You got to climb the mountain to get to the treasure, or you have to fight the dragon to get past it, whatever it is, right? And our mythology and our stories reflect this because this is something we feel as humans. We want the good in life, so we have to face this conflict. And in dating relationships, there's so much fear, but if we let that fear stop us, then we're giving up on the great potential and the great good we could find, right? And it's like, yeah. Do you feel like there's a lot of like people being afraid? I was like, well, it's not worth it to get hurt again, you know, that kind of thing. Do you ever hear people say that?
Yeah, I mean, putting it exactly like, I don't think people tend to verbalize that so much, but that is what the feeling is. It's like, I'm not going to put myself out there because of all the possibilities of disappointment and things like that. So yeah, I don't think people are so great at verbalizing it generally, but yeah, that's what's there. And it's this, you know, idea of like, oh, so even when you just talk about the process of like dating, like initially going on dates and stuff like that, people kind of like almost not being up for the emotional, mental, physical energy that it takes to do it. And this is where, you know, I talk about this idea of like, this is why boundaries and knowing what you want and all of that stuff is important, so that you can be clear about how you are using the energy that is involved in going out and meeting people and getting to know people. I mean, yeah, on a very basic level, regardless of how I think extroverted you are or how much of a social person you are, anyone can acknowledge the work of like, oh, I have to meet someone new and we have to like start from zero. Like, yeah, that's a lot of effort. And so you want to be mindful of who you're directing that effort and energy to. And that can help a lot with not becoming burnt out with dating and also not becoming bitter and kind of jaded about the process.
100%. What do you have to say to the person who says, and I think this is going to be a good question to kind of wrap it up on. This is, I think, a question that a lot of people at some point in their lives kind of ask. And it's like, what do you say to the person who says, you know what, this breakup really got to me. I just don't think it's going to work out for me. I just don't really think I'm going to find anybody for me. Or I just really don't think that I'm going to find someone like that, or that I felt that way with, or whatever it is. Right. It's like, I lost that and it's over for me. Like, what do you say to people who, because I've talked to people who have definitely felt that down, right? That's not so uncommon. I don't think, we've all been there. So what do you say to that kind of person?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's a very, fair feeling. So again, emotions aren't to be judged, and it's very understandable to feel that way. And I think even people who have that thought, but are still even put like can still push forward with even having that thought. Like, I'm not sure if I'm going to, but I'm still going to try. The truth of the matter is the odds are more in your favor than you realize, because there are literally billions of people on this earth. And therefore the numbers are more in your favor than not when it comes to being able to find someone who you connect with and who you're attracted to and who you like and all of that. The thing though is, you do have to be willing to do the work and put in the effort. Like I always say, I'll say to women, the perfect man for you is not going to come knock on your door and say, hey, I'm the perfect guy for you. Because honestly, if someone did that, you would call the police because you would be freaked out. So what I mean is, like, you're not going to just be able to sit in your house and hope that they come along. Because even if you meet someone who you have potential with, you were sitting in your house, you meet them online. Okay, great. But then you still have to meet them in person. Like, you still have to go out and interact and engage with people. So to this idea of like, oh, I might never find the one. You're definitely not going to, if you're not willing to, like you said, like take the risk of the adventure. Meeting someone new and finding a romantic partner is an adventure. And I'm a big proponent of trying to make it as fun and enjoyable and adventurous as possible. Yes, there are tricky parts, but that is the nature of human relationships in general. You do not, if you're going to socialize with any other human, you do not get to remove the aspects that are unknown or where you can't control someone, because that is human behavior. So outside of deciding that you are truly going to be a completely isolated human being, which is a very hard thing to actually manage to do, even in today's virtual world, then unless you've made that decision, then you are going to interact with other people in general. And so it's really more about making it as good of an experience as possible. So you can find someone else, they are out there, but I am here to say that it may not be as easy as you would like it to be. And ultimately, if it's something that's really worth it, then it's not always an easy thing. A lot of things that are worth a lot do not come easily.
100%. I agree. That's excellent advice. All right. On that note, Tracy, would you mind sharing with people where they can find your work and get in touch with you if they would like to do so?
Yeah, the main place is on YouTube. And so it's under my name, Tracy Pinnock. That's TRACIEPINNOCK. I go by The Better Coach. I'm also on Instagram, the_better_coach.
Awesome. Amazing. All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up. Thank you so much, Tracy, for being on the podcast and sharing this information with us, talking about this very important issue. And you obviously have a lot of experience with this, a lot of knowledge. And so I'm really grateful that you were able to come on and share it with us. And for all those listening, I hope that this resonates with you. I hope that if you are going through a breakup, you don't give into that hopelessness. You know, there is light at the end of the tunnel. We just have to do the work, keep working on ourselves, mind our business, get our money, pursue our purpose, level up mind, body, spirit. I know that I've been through some horrible breakups and I survived, and God knows if I can do it, you can do it too. Yeah. We've all been there. So yeah, that's going to be it for this one. All right. Go with grace. Never give up your power. This is Josh Segafis signing off.
Thank you for listening. Make sure to visit www.joshuasegafis.com. Catch you on the flip side.